Militär aktuell, der Podcast on Military and Security.
Lockheed Martin recently went on a roadshow in Austria. The well-known US defense and aerospace company brought along a state-of-the-art flight simulator. Militär aktuell had the unique opportunity to test fly the fighter jet F-35 under the expert guidance of pilot Ryan Blake. Afterwards, we sat down with him and Mario Magana, International Business Development at Lockheed Martin, to talk about the F-35 program. Enjoy this deep dive episode of the Militär Aktuell podcast. I'm sitting in a F-35 simulator, and I'm one of the few people who haven't flown this airplane. Next to me is a pilot.
Perfect. My name is Ryan Blake. My call sign is Cujo.
So Cujo, you flew F-16 and you're flying F-35.
That's exactly right. So I've actually had a chance to fly a lot of different airplanes in my career. So over 50 different types. The most recent that I was flying before the F-35 was the F-16. Very capable fourth generation fighter. And then I transitioned a couple of years ago into the F-35, a fifth generation fighter. Fairly smooth transition, but fairly exciting going from an F-16 to an F-35. And so now I think you'll get your chance to fly the F-35. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready. Yes, my name is Stefan Tesch. I've never flown an airplane before. When I was a child, I used the Microsoft Flight Simulator a lot. Maybe a little bit of preparation for that.
That's all you need. You're going to do just fine. All right. So
I'm sitting here in the cockpit, very narrow. What's the first step?
Okay, so what you can see here, right, in your cockpit, you mentioned that it's narrow. I will say that actually it's wider than some fighter cockpits. When I went from my F-16 to the F-35, I actually was impressed by how much space I had in the cockpit. At your right hand here, you'll see that's the control stick. So you had in your Microsoft Flight Simulator, right, you probably had a yoke or something. Did you have a stick when you were...
Yes, it was a stick, before? Yeah.
Okay, perfect. All right, so you know in general with the stick, your preparation with a Microsoft Flight Simulator, all you're going to do, you're going to hold it exactly like you've got there. And when you pull back, it'll climb the airplane. When you push forward, you'll descend. If you turn to the left, you'll move left. And if you turn to the right, you'll move right. You'll see on your left hand there, that's the throttle. And so the throttle just moves forward and back. And so when you move the throttle forward, you'll go faster. When you move it back, you'll go slower. What you're noticing right now is that you've reached it feels like a detent or a stop. If you look right up there, that is showing you the amount of thrust that you've requested. And that says that you requested almost 100% of what the aircraft will give you without afterburner. Of course, this aircraft has afterburner. And so if you continue to push past that hump, so just push a little bit harder, there you go. All right, you see there, now you've got about 150%. And what we define that as is full afterburner. So now we've dumped a lot of fuel in the back of the airplane. We've lit it on fire. And so now you're going a lot faster. You've just increased your thrust by about 50%. And so now you're going a lot faster than you were before.
For our listeners, what exactly is the afterburner?
So the jet engines are very complicated machines. But in general, they will bring in the air from the front of the airplane and they'll compress it. And then we combust it, kind of like in a car engine. Except in a aircraft engine and a jet engine, those are spinning very, very fast. We combust it, and then the air goes very fast out the back. So that gives us a lot of thrust. It's actually, even without an afterburner, it's a very powerful engine. But our afterburner now, we just take a bunch of extra fuel, and we combust that. So we have some igniters, just like a spark plug in a car, and it ignites that fuel. And now that gives us a lot more concentrated energy. And it really just gives that, when you see the video of the fighters taking off and what looks like fire coming out of the back, that's the afterburner, which really increases your forward thrust in the aircraft.
But it's only limited to a very short time, I guess.
So you could go in afterburner as long as you need, but it takes a lot of fuel. And so generally, we will use afterburner when we need it for very short periods. If we're trying to take off in a short distance, we'll use afterburner. If we're trying to accelerate really fast, we'll use afterburner. And then once we get to the speed we need, generally, we will pull that throttle back to a place that's not using afterburner, and that will allow us to cruise more efficiently and be able to use the onboard fuel that we've got. Of course, this airplane can air-to-air refuel, and so really we could stay airborne indefinitely, hours and hours and hours if needed, by constantly taking on fuel from a air-to-air refueling aircraft. Those are your main controls, is the stick in your right hand and the throttle in your left hand. So what we're going to do now is you're going to take off. So kind of like in your Microsoft flight simulator, you're going to push that throttle forward. I'm going to select go here on the simulator, and we're going to start accelerating. What you're seeing out front is what you would be seeing through your helmet-mounted display, and we can talk about that for just a minute. Your helmet-mounted display puts all of that information right in front of your eyes. And I'll be honest, when I'm flying, I forget that it's on my helmet. It just seems like it's out there in the distance somewhere. It's very intuitive, but it's always right in front of my eyes wherever I look. And I've got important things like my heading and my airspeed and my altitude. All of the information that I would need to fly the airplane is right there. I don't have to look down like I would have to in a previous type of airplane. It's all displayed in front of me. That also, that information, no matter where I look, I can see that information. So now if you look over to your left, you can see what that helmet-mounted display would look like. And as you turn, that information stays in front of your eyes. And there's not only information about your airspeed and altitude, but there's a lot of tactical information. So you could look to the right, for example, and you could see where your wingman is. So what you're looking at now is a circle with a number 2 in it, and that tells you exactly where the other F-35 in your formation is. It tells you how far he is away, and so you always know where all your friendly aircraft are and where any of the other maybe enemy aircraft are. So all that information is always in front of you. You, of course, also have this big touchscreen panel in front of you. So this is like a gigantic iPad, right? You can touch it and you can select different things that you want to look at. You can dive into submenus just like you would on a tablet. Just touch where you want to go, touch the things you want to look at, and it'll automatically display it for you. You can make the windows bigger if you want, resize them just like you could in an iPad. You get a lot of good tactical information here. So this display right here, we call the tactical situation display, is like you're looking down from space and you can see the top-down view. You can see where your aircraft is. You can see where your wingman aircraft is. You can see where other aircraft are.
It's like a radar. Or it's a radar?
So one of the sensors it uses is the radar. So actually, you brought up a good point. Where does this information come from? And it comes from a lot of places. So the F-35, in addition to being a very maneuverable fighter, also has a lot of sensors on it. So you said radar, and this aircraft does have its own radar, and it points out the nose, and it's a very fast radar, a very powerful radar, so it can see many, many miles in front of us, and it can see things all around us. We also have all sorts of other sensors that is that are being used to display this picture that you see right here. So we have some electronic warning receivers that are listening for any other radar that's pointed at us. And so that will help to build that picture. So that way we can see things that are behind us. We can see things that are underneath us. We also have infrared cameras that are looking around. And so that can tell if there are other heat signatures, other aircraft. It can also see if there are missiles that might be fired towards us. We also have interrogators that are constantly looking for other aircraft that might be responding to certain interrogations. And so all of that information gets fused together right here in front of you. And so this picture you're seeing is what we call a fused picture when we talk about sensor fusion. It takes all these sensors and it displays it right here to you. The good thing about the F-35 that other airplanes generally don't have is that when I was in my other fourth generation fighter aircraft, I did have various sensors like a radar or an electronic warfare pod or a targeting pod. I would have to operate each of those individually. And each of them gave me a piece of the information, and in my brain I would have to decide this piece goes with this piece, which goes with this piece. In the F-35, I get all of that information right there on the display in front of me. So I don't have to think about which sensor is looking at it. Right now, I don't even know. I just know that I'm getting that information from somewhere. And I could certainly go dive down into the data and figure out which sensor it is. But for my purposes, I just want to know that something is out there and the F-35 aircraft has identified it for me. I might also be getting that information from another source. It may not even come from my airplane. So my wingman may be looking at that with his radar, and through the data link that we've got within our flight, he may be passing that information to me. And the airplane, if I want to query it, will tell me where it got the information. But what I know tactically is I see that information right there. In addition to this being a touchscreen, you can also control everything right from your stick and throttle as if you were at your keyboard and mouse on a computer. That way you wouldn't even have to take your hands off of the stick or the throttle while you're flying. You could just command it with the buttons here. So for example, right now we've selected that window for use. If I wanted to control a targeting pod, I could just take that switch, I could click it once to the right and you can move that. And you see that now that's what I have selected. So if I move it back over to here to my tactical situation display, now I could actually start to get some information about my tactical situation. You have the equivalent of a mouse right here. So if you take that and slew that around, you can move that cursor right there over to one of those squares, which is an air target. And so now we start to get some information about that air target. We can see how fast it's going, which direction it's going. If there's any sort of identification that's provided for there, it can listen for an electronic signature and tell me what kind of airplane it is, whether it's friendly or whether it's hostile. All of that is right there. If I wanted to designate it as something that I need to get a little bit more information for, so right now you're highlighting our wingman. And so you can see what our wingman's fuel state is, what kind of weapons he has. And so all that is without us ever talking on the radio to the wingman. You could just query and the data link will tell me automatically he's got this much fuel and he's got this many bombs or this many missiles left. So that's a general overview of the cockpit. You can notice that there's not a lot of switches in the cockpit. It's actually a fairly intuitive, fairly clean design. And having never flown an aircraft before, right, you're switching between windows. You're already interrogating your wingman or other aircraft out there. So see, with no experience and with a few minutes of instruction, you already kind of get the idea of how to fly the F-35.
Maneuvering here through the menu while flying must be very difficult.
So it takes a little bit of practice, but another secret to the F-35 is that it's actually pretty easy to fly. The way the flight controls are designed, it's a very stable, it's very maneuverable platform, but very stable. So really, we don't have to spend a lot of our time as pilots flying the airplane, right? We spend our time looking at the tactical situation. And so think about a field commander, right, who may have somebody else, you know, driving the tank or something for him while he just makes decisions. It almost feels like that in the F-35. The airplane is so easy to fly, you don't have to think a lot about it. You can just let it go, put it in the position that you need, and then you can concentrate on the tactical situation. What you've noticed here, you hit a button, whether it was intentional or not, or you've put yourself into an air-to-surface mode. So this switch right here, that's the air-to-surface. If you were to push it forward, you would be in an air-to-air mode, right? So this is how we interact with the airplane to tell it that, okay, now I'm going to shoot a missile. Now I'm going to drop a bomb. Now I need to navigate my way around. And so it's a very intuitive interface, as you've seen. And we're going to practice that. So in just a minute, we're going to take off, and I'll show you how to shoot a missile and how to drop a bomb. Are you ready for that?
More than ready.
All right, perfect. Okay, so for the takeoff, you've already pushed the throttle forward. I'm going to hit go on our simulation here, and we're going to start accelerating down the runway. We're going to start gaining speed very quickly. And when we get to about 160 knots or so, you're just going to pull back on the stick a little bit, and we're going to fly away from the ground. Once we fly away from the ground, you see we've got a gear handle over here to the left, and you'll just squeeze that, and you'll raise that up, and that's the way we'll raise the gear. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, your takeoff is complete. It's really that simple. You'll be flying away from the ground. So we're on go now. If you push the throttle even a little bit further, we'll do an afterburner takeoff. There you go. So you see very quickly. Yeah, we're already 100 knots on the runway.
60 knots.
That's right.
140.
Yeah, so right there you can pull back. There you go. And so you're already airborne. And so now you can raise the gear. Perfect.
Just have to use the pedals a little bit.
And so the pedals, honestly, we use those for some steering on the ground, and if we get into some close-in maneuvering, we'll use those. A lot of times, since the airplane is so stable, we'll just move the stick the direction we want to go. And so now, what you're doing right now is you're turning right in a very smooth turn. You can see how smooth and easy to fly the airplane is. Just continue that turn to the right. And we're going to go about 20 more degrees or so, and then we'll roll out and we'll show you how to target an air target.
In which area are we flying? I didn't ask you about the airbase we were starting.
Yeah, so our simulation, we're actually from our main plant back in Fort Worth. Of course, we've got three main plants that we produce these airplanes from. We've got one in the United States, we've got one in Japan, and we've got one here in Europe in Italy. We're simulating that we're flying out of our United States plant in Fort Worth, Texas. So already, right, we've only been flying for a little over a minute, and you're at 470 knots, almost the speed of sound, and you're climbing away, and you're pointing yourself towards these air targets here. So in order to interact with the system, we're going to move our selected window back over here to the left. So if you take this switch right here and just click it, you can click it once to the right. Yeah, back to the left. There you go. So now we're interacting with our target tactical situation display. Let's move your cursor right there. You're going to move it to that first square, which is an air target. And automatically you can see our radar is looking at that, and it gives us some information. And you're going to take your target management switch on the stick and click it forward once.
I highlighted the target now.
That's exactly right. So you've got a red circle.
A white square on the screen.
Yep.
Now it's circled.
Yep. And so now we're just going to put the aircraft in an air-to-air mode. So your weapons management switch, you'll push it forward once. So now you're in air-to-air. You've got a red circle around your target. And you see over here on the right, it's both on your panoramic cockpit display and in your helmet-mounted display, you now have a bunch of target information. So you see automatically that aircraft is 48 miles away, so we can't see him with our eyes. But of course, the aircraft knows where it is, and so it'll draw a square around him. And just looking through your helmet, you know exactly where that target is. You know how far away he is, how fast he's going, how high he is. So a bunch of information about him. The aircraft will also do its own calculations and its own interrogations, and it'll be able to tell you whether or not that aircraft is hostile.
And the aircraft tells me that it's hostile or not.
That's right. So what we have done, right, we have to tell the aircraft what our rules of engagement are, and generally we do that before we take off. Now the aircraft knows what the rules are, and it will tell us that based off the rules that you told me, that aircraft is hostile. So today, in our simulation, this aircraft is hostile. And you can see here we're getting contributors from a bunch of different sensors, some radar and some infrared sensors and some interrogators. All of our sensors say that this aircraft is hostile. We're in an air-to-air mode, we've selected it, and even though he's beyond visual range, we can now shoot a missile against it. So now if you're ready, this red button right there, the weapon select, you can just press that button.
Looks dangerous.
Yeah, it's dangerous for the other aircraft. Let's do this.
Okay, I've pressed it.
Okay, so now you're looking out front and you're going to see, now you see the missile, right? Yeah, so the rocket motor of the missile has fired and you see the missile going at several times the speed of sound out in front of us. You'll also notice that the missile right now is talking to the airplane and they're exchanging information. And so if that target out in front of us started to maneuver, the aircraft would know and it would tell the missile that the other aircraft was maneuvering and it would tell the missile which way to turn. Now the missile has its own radar and the missile is now guiding on that target. So the missile sees the target You're also looking on your screen here. You're looking at another infrared picture, so a heat-sensitive picture. You can see right at the middle of the screen, that's the airplane that's trying to attack you. Of course, you're in a stealth airplane. It doesn't know you're here yet, but you can see it because of your advanced sensors.
Was the radar picture of the missile that, known?
That was the heat picture, the infrared picture. And so what you're looking at now, you saw a big explosion. Mm-hmm. So before that aircraft ever knew you were there, you were able to engage it, shoot the missile, and now you see that you just shot that aircraft down.
Okay, we got it.
Yep, good job. All right, so you've got your first kill. Okay, so now that we engaged an air target, let's show you how we engage a surface target. And it's as easy as that air target. Mm-hmm. So let's put the aircraft in air-to-surface mode. So the same weapon select switch here, we're going to move it to the left. And so now we're in an air-to-surface mode here. And so in our air-to-surface mode, you can see that automatically we've got some bombs selected. And this tells you, it just highlights in white which bomb we have selected. Mm-hmm. And we're in this air-to-surface mode here. We still have the same cursors that we had before. So let's move that cursor with that cursor select. Let's move it over here to that triangle on the ground, the one that says 106 on it.
106, okay. Yep. I marked it. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So just like you did with the air target, we're going to select that one for targeting. So you're going to take that button and move it forward once.
Button on the right stick.
Right. The first time tells us that we're interested in that target, and do it again. The second time tells us that that's a target we want to bomb. And so now we have just told this bomb right here what the coordinates of that target are.
Can you even see it on the camera? So is it a tank? No.
It's actually a surface-to-air missile launcher. So we want to go attack that, because now it probably won't see us because we're a stealth aircraft. But there might be some other aircraft that we want to protect, and so we want to go bomb that.
So the hostile air defense.
That's exactly right. It's a hostile air defense. All right. So that aircraft, or that target on the ground now, is to our left. If you look in your helmet out to the left, as you move your head, you can see. Now, do you see that triangle that you're looking at through your helmet? That's where the target is, right? So that imagery that you've got in your helmet is always there. And now you just have to look out the side, and automatically the aircraft tells you that's where your target is.
But it's on my left, the target now?
The target is on your left now. So we've kind of flown past it. But that's okay. The aircraft knows where it is. You can move your helmet and you can see where it is. So now we're going to turn to the left. So just like you did after takeoff, except now to the left, let's turn back in. So we're constantly getting information from the airplane about where we are in relation to the target. So you see we're about 15 miles away from the target, and all that information gets displayed right into your helmet. And we're about a minute and a half away from the target. So as you turn to the left, you'll continue to turn. We even have some steering cues here. This airplane symbol that's in your helmet shows you which direction you're going. And this steering line over here tells you you need to continue turning to the left to get to the target. So as you continue to turn, eventually you'll be pointed at the target. So just, continue that turn. And this is a high G airplane. You could even pull back hard on the stick, and you can see you're going at 4 Gs now. Very good. So you can pull all the way up to 9 Gs in this airplane. So right around there, you can roll out. So stick to the right.
We're turning back. I was too fast.
Yeah, that's all right. So back to the left. And so you can see automatically the aircraft tells us we're in range for the bomb, and now we're in zone. So just like we did for air-to-air, you can hit that same red dangerous button. Go ahead.
My hand is shaking.
Yeah, you got it. So hit the button. You can see just like before, we get indications that there's a launch. Mm-hmm. And now we get timing. It's 30 seconds until that bomb hits the target. So what you're looking at here in your target FLIR picture, so that's the heat-sensitive picture that you saw for the air-to-air target, you're seeing the same thing for the air-to-ground target. And you can now break out those missiles that were going to target somebody else. We're going to take that out so they can't target anybody else.
How far is the target away now?
We're overflying the target now, so it's below us by a few miles. And you can see in just a couple of seconds now, We have just bombed it. So our sensors that you didn't have to do anything with, right? All you did was you took the information that the aircraft presented you, and you just made a tactical decision. You're the commander. Mm-hmm. And you decided that is hostile and I need to go attack it.
But when is the perfect time to set off the bomb?
So the aircraft will tell you when you're in the ability of the bomb to hit the target. And you saw it was a window. And so there, you know, there's some planning that you'll do beforehand to decide what are the appropriate targets to attack. But once you've made that planning, really it's as simple as designating it on the display, just like you did. And then the aircraft will actually tell you which direction to steer, and it will tell you when you can hit that weapon release switch to drop the bomb. It gives you all the information you need.
So we were overflying enemy air defense and they were not shooting at us.
That's exactly right. Yes, that's exactly right. Because you're in an airplane that has a very small radar signature and they couldn't see you. Now your fourth generation compatriots perhaps could be seen, but you just took out that SAM site so that they couldn't be shot down. And so you, how many combat missions did you say you've flown?
This was my first.
This was your first. Okay, so this was your first combat mission, and you just shot down an enemy aircraft, okay, and you just destroyed an enemy target, right?
Okay. So all the life goals are reached.
There you go. There you go. So it's really it's such an intuitive interface that with just a few minutes of instruction, you can go and fly a full combat mission. I'd like to talk about some safety implications, some safety features that the airplane has. There are times where a pilot might become incapacitated. Either he pulls too many G's or he has a problem with oxygen or some physiological problem. When that happens, fortunately it doesn't happen often, but sometimes it does happen, a pilot may become unconscious. And the airplane may start to fly towards the ground when the pilot's unconscious. This aircraft has a system called the Automatic Ground Collision Avoidance System that will automatically make sure the airplane does not crash if the pilot is unconscious. Mm-hmm. So let's simulate that you became unconscious and the airplane has started to dive towards the ground. So just push forward on the stick. Keep pushing forward until we're diving at the ground in a steep dive. All right, and now let go of the stick. So we've just simulated that you are unconscious, you're not controlling anymore, and so you don't have to do anything with the stick now. Yeah, you can just let go exactly like you've done.
Okay, we're pointing to the ground, we're going down very fast.
And you see those chevrons right there? So immediately, did you notice the airplane avoided the ground? You weren't even touching the stick, and the airplane immediately flew away from the ground. So if for some reason you were incapacitated, it's okay. The airplane will fly away from the ground until you regain consciousness, and then you can start flying again.
Have you ever experienced such a situation?
Fortunately, I haven't. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I know people who have. Mm-hmm. And this system actually now has documented lives that are saved because of it. Because people who, and we've got this system in other Lockheed Martin platforms like the F-16, and we've documented that when people go unconscious, which again doesn't happen often, but when it does, we can save their lives with this system. While you're flying, now this is a highly maneuverable airplane, right? A fifth generation fighter, there are some key components of it. We've mentioned stealth already, that's one key component. We've talked about the sensor fusion, that's another one. We've talked about the data links, sharing that information, that's another one. A fourth one of a fifth generation airplane is that they are highly maneuverable and, I'll admit, really fun to fly. Mm-hmm. So let's look at that. Have you ever done an aileron roll before?
A roll?
Yes, a roll. All right. So this is a very maneuverable airplane. So we're flying right now. We're about 4,000 feet above the ground. We're going about the speed of sound. Take your stick and just move it as hard as you can to the left.
Okay. Whoa. That was a roll.
Right. Right. So a very, very rapid roll. Why don't you push the throttle all the way forward until we get into afterburner. And now start pulling back on the stick.
Now we're
just
doing a
looping. Now we're going to do a loop. Yep.
Okay.
So just
Whoa.
Pull back. Yeah. Okay. So you started there at, so you're at 9 G's now.
I can feel them.
Lots of G's.
I can see the ground.
There you go. Perfect.
Rolling back. That was a looping.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. All right. Very good. So you can see now in an F-35, probably you're going to be targeting things that are well out in front of you, right? That's generally how this would work. But you can see if for some reason there was another enemy aircraft within visual range, you can see how quickly you could maneuver this airplane in order to defend yourself and, if you needed, to shoot down another airplane.
And in real, it is also that easy to make a looping?
It absolutely is, yeah. So the simulation you're flying here is just like you would have in the airplane. As a matter of fact, the F-35 only has a single seat, right? There's only one person in the cockpit. And so when you're learning to fly the F-35, like you're doing right now, there's nobody else in the airplane with you. So we train on simulators just like the one that you're flying right now. And it's so much like the airplane that the very first time you fly an F-35, you're in the airplane all alone and you don't need an instructor to tell you what to do because you've already done all the practice in the simulator on the ground. And because, frankly, it's a fairly easy and intuitive airplane to fly. Okay, so you've done a takeoff. You've now done a full combat mission. You've done some aerobatics. I think the last thing to do now is to come back and land. Are you ready to try landing?
That's the sensitive part.
It's going to be just fine. As a matter of fact, the airplane's going to help you. What you're going to see now through your visuals is you're going to see we're about 5 miles from a runway that's right in front of us. All right, so to get ourselves prepared for landing, we were doing our aerobatics and our combat maneuvering in full afterburner. But now that we're landing, we don't need that anymore. So you can pull the throttle back. So just continue to pull back even some more. All right about there is fine. So just a mid-range setting. In order to land, we've raised our landing gear, right, to preserve our stealth and to make ourselves faster. But now to land, we're going to put our landing gear back down. So you're going to take that handle.
A very big handle.
Yep, and so you just squeeze perfect, just like that. Okay, so you've just lowered the landing gear, and we've got an indication here that all three landing gear are down. Now, I told you that this airplane's fairly easy to fly, and it'll help you land. One of the ways it helps you is it can control the throttle on its own. So that button right there, just press it and release it. Okay, you feel how you see the throttle is moving on its own? So now the airplane is going to control the speed. You as a pilot don't even have to do that anymore. So the only thing you now have to do is to focus on pointing down towards the runway. And the airplane's even going to help you there. It's going to show you exactly where you're going with that miniature airplane symbol, the flight path marker. And you're just going to put that flight path marker at the beginning of the runway, and you're just going to maintain that. Since the airplane, if you've done in any of your Microsoft flight simulators, sometimes in other airplanes, you have to use trim a lot. You have to smaller surfaces. This airplane does that for you. So it's automatically going to trim all of the flight control surfaces. So when you let go of the stick, the airplane will stay exactly where you put it. So to land, you're just going to slightly push forward until the flight path marker is at the beginning of the runway. And then you can pretty much let go of the stick. And it will continue to fly towards the end of the runway, and you can just make small movements until you get down to the runway. All right, you ready to try?
I'm ready, yeah. Let's do it.
Okay, so, you don't even need to touch the throttle, just the stick. Exactly. All right.
Do I have to use flaps?
No, as a matter of fact, because the airplane is so smart, it will do the flaps for you. So you're doing very well right now. You're flying exactly what you want, the way you want to do it.
The runway in front of me.
Perfect.
Pointing with the stick on the heads-up display on the runway. The throttle is moving automatically, 136 knots.
I'll apologize, it's almost boring, right? It's so easy to fly, you just have to wait for the runway to come to you.
I thought being a pilot is more exciting.
Yeah, it's our secret. When you officially release the podcast, you're going to say this was very hard and only very, very smart people can do it.
That's a good idea. Okay, I can see the braking straps here.
And you'll see you'll just settle down to the runway.
So it's long enough, you're not on a aircraft carrier.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yep, so you're at a good landing. Your rudder pedals there, the toe at the top of the rudder pedals, if you just push those forward, that's your brakes. There you go. Yeah, and so you can steer, you can move your left foot forward, and that'll steer you off to the left. Okay, and that's all there is to it. You just flew a full mission in the F-35.
Wow, thanks for teaching me.
Absolutely, yeah. Very nice work.
So we hit two targets.
That's right. Yeah.
Looping.
That's right.
A side roll.
Yeah, and you saw how the aircraft could save you if you went unconscious, and you came back and you landed, and now you've got a victory party.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the party.
All right, let's go do it. All right, nice work.
Okay.
Do you like this podcast? Militär Aktuell is also available in print. The Austrian military magazine is published 4 times a year and reports on security policy issues, the Austrian armed forces, and the international defense industry. You will receive regular updates via our newsletter, on our social media channels, and of course on our website. Visit militäraktuell.at.
So we're in front of the cockpit. Could you please explain me what are the most important parts in the cockpit?
Yeah, absolutely. And so you see the first thing that you'll notice is this big seat that you sit on, right? So it's a Martin Baker ejection seat made by Martin Baker Aircraft Company in the United Kingdom. And so you see that as you sit in the seat right here, this is the seat that not only keeps you strapped into the airplane and makes sure as you're pulling G's that you're not going to move around the cockpit, but if something happened bad in the airplane and then you needed to get out of the airplane, there's an ejection handle where the canopy would go away from the airplane, this ejection seat would go up the rails, and it would immediately give you a parachute that you could then safely get down to the ground. So that's the first thing you'll notice here. You and I also talked about the stick and the throttle, right? It's set up just exactly where your hands would kind of naturally rest. If you were to sit in an airline seat, right, you would sit down in the seat and your hands would naturally rest on the armrests. Well, that's exactly where the stick and the throttle are there. So very convenient where you need to be. There's not a lot of switches and not a lot of things that you need to interact with, but you see the very few things there are all easily within arm's reach. So you were able to raise the landing gear handle here, which is just right off your left side.
Why is the landing gear handle such a big handle and it's not a thing on the display?
The landing gear is generally, it's something that you want to positively think, now I need to lower that landing gear. And so it's a big handle only as a reminder that, okay, I'm only going to do this right after I take off. I'm going to raise the gear. Right before I land, I'm going to lower the gear. And honestly, this has... landing gear handles have been this way for a really long time. It's something that pilots of retractable gear aircraft get used to. They know that there's going to be something. You can see the handle actually is in the shape of a wheel. And so we pilots are just used to, you look around the cockpit and the thing that's in the shape of the wheel, you move it up and down when you want your wheels to go up and down.
And in older jets, the stick was between the legs, am I right?
That's right, yeah. So in most other fighter aircraft that you fly, the stick, yes, is between the legs. The Lockheed Martin F-16 was one of the first ones to move the stick off to the side. And the reason why the stick was in between the legs for most other aircraft is because in older aircraft, and this was true, the ones that I started flying 25 years ago, is they were all the stick that was in the middle, the controls, were connected directly to your flight control system. And so you needed a stick that went right through the floor that was then connected via, you know, cables and pulleys back to your ailerons and to your elevators and to your rudder. In the F-16 that came before this and now in the F-35, my stick is actually not connected to any of those surfaces. It just goes directly to a flight control computer. And because of that, I don't need the stick to be in the middle because of all those cables, because there are no cables. And so it's actually a much more natural feel for a pilot. Like I said, when you're sitting down in an airline seat, just to put your arm in an armrest, it's that same way the pilot can now be in a natural position and can easily make those small movements off to the right where the stick is. And all of those signals go immediately to the flight control computer, which then does all of the magic it needs to with the flight controls themselves, without the pilot having needing to physically move the flight controls.
There is a small display just more or less between the legs with a horizon. Is this a kind of backup?
That's exactly right, yeah. So that's what we call our standby flight instrument. And so we have got a very reliable, great big panoramic cockpit display that we've been talking about. if something were to happen, if we were to have an electrical problem where that display went away, we want a standby. And so that standby that you have down there, if the display goes away, you'll always be able to see that standby. And so even if we were flying through clouds where we couldn't see the ground, we would always be able to see our attitude there. You can see the colors, right? There's blue on top and there's brown on the bottom. So we'll always know, let's keep the sky up and let's keep the ground down and keep ourselves in that appropriate attitude. So even if I didn't have the large display, I could look at my standby display.
Okay, great. So after flying with the F-35 simulator, we're sitting here at the table. Next to me, there is the pilot, Kucher, and
Mario Magagna, and I'm the Austria F-35 lead for Lockheed Martin.
Could you be so kind to tell us a little bit about the F-35 program?
Yeah, the program is very mature. We have 20 countries who have selected the F-35. The original 8 partners, 5 of them were European. Now there's 20. Those 13 of those are European. We've delivered over 1,300 airplanes and counting, and we're delivering 156 units per year. And so what that translates to is the affordability piece of it all. A lot of the questions was like, look at this airplane. Everybody knows it's very capable, but it translates to very expensive, but not necessarily. What we're 156 airplanes per year translates to achieving economies of scales in the supply chain, manufacturing, et cetera, that brings the cost down. I mentioned 13 operators in Europe that are 13 countries that have selected the F-35. We're projecting by 2035, the middle of 2030s, there'll be over 700 F-35s in Europe. You look at Austria, like where it's at. Switzerland selected the F-35. The Czech Republic has selected the F-35. Italy is an original partner to the F-35. In fact, they have a final assembly checkout facility in Kamering as well. And then Germany is just to the north, right? I mean, there's a lot of F-35 operators in the region, and so that's why we talked a little bit about the interoperability piece, and not so much of interoperability of being able to share data. That's great, but also think about joint training exercises and all that. Austria and Switzerland being able to do joint training exercises with F-35, in that matter. 700 F-35s in Europe also translates to deterrence. So, just imagine nobody's going to go attack Europe with 700 F-35s right behind the scenes. So that's a major deal for us. The threat environment, as we see it, it's growing exponentially. There's always new systems, new tactics that are evolving. And the F-35 is a fifth generation airplane. We talked about stealth, sensor fusion, the internal weapons bay, and all the advantages to fifth generation. And so we will always look to modernize the F-35. We're always looking to continually make these upgrades throughout the future to make sure that the F-35 remains relevant, make sure it stays ahead of that ever-evolving threat. And obviously to achieve deterrence for that matter. But if that threat does, eventually attack, it has the ability to take care of it, really. So the program, like I mentioned, is mature. We think it's a viable option for Austria, as we understand that they need to replace their Eurofighter Tranche 1 airplanes. And the timelines work out great. The production is quite solid. And 156 airplanes a year, it's most people could just like, oh, well, the queue must be long. But from what we believe, we can accommodate Austria's timelines and so forth. We talked a little bit about the training aspects of things. It must be very hard for our pilots to get there. And you heard from Cujo that it gets easier for the pilots. And the maturity of the program. We talked about the 20 countries that have selected them, the F-35 already. Also, the training is mature. So we've already established that you can easily transition from fourth gen fighters to fifth gen fighters. So it's being demonstrated today. Same with the maintainers. It's the same way. The maintainers are also learning how to maintain a fifth generation fighter. The maintenance is easier. There's predictive maintenance and things in that nature. And so for the most part, we think it's a viable future for Austria to select the F-35. It'll continue to be relevant. It'll help out with the security of the European continent.
Maybe you could also give us an overview about the versions of the F-35.
Sure. So the F-35, there's three different versions. The F-35A is the CTOL, conventional takeoff and landing. Most air forces have selected that. There's the B model, F-35B, short takeoff and vertical landing. There's some air forces in Europe that have selected that, the UK, Italy as well. It's primarily used by the Marine Corps. And then there's also the F-35C, which is for carrier landings. It's primarily operated by the U.S. Navy. Has a heavier landing gear, larger wingspan, basically made for carrier operations. The C model can hold more fuel just because it has longer wings, a little bit heavier. So we talked about 13 countries have selected the F-35 in Europe, and counting 700 F-35s by 2035. Also, the European industry is participating in this F-35 program. BAE, an original partner, or in the UK, an original partner, but BAE is doing the aft. They manufacture the aft. Finland, a company called Patria, is going to do the forward fuselage. And we're partnered with Rheinmetall in Germany to do the center fuselage. So there's a large part of the airplane that's being manufactured here in Europe. There's additional components, harnesses, et cetera. I talked about the Italy's final assembly and checkout facility. And, you know, for every F-35 that's procured or sold, there's greater than 25% benefit to European industry. So it is, an F-35 is a global global platform, but there's a massive European footprint. And then the 156 airplanes I mentioned, it's important because it's a mature program. We're achieving massive economies of scale, affordability, the supply chain. You know, we're not just ordering 20 widgets or 20, helmets and things in that nature. It's just we're achieving massive economies of scale, and that helps keep the supply chain constant with other platforms where they're only building 2025. It's hard to have the supply chain build, just 20 units and all that, because then you start getting into DMS and diminishing marginal supply and things in that nature, and just think of the sustainment piece at the end of the day. In 156 airplanes a year, we're building, if you go to the production line, you'll see that we're building, Finland's airplanes, Polish airplanes, Japanese airplanes, U.S. airplanes, and they're all just all in one line. They're not just being built, one after another. And so all these platforms that you see, all these countries, F-35s that are being built, you see there, you're achieving that economies of scale. So everybody's sharing that initial cost.
It's maybe a very difficult question, but how long does it take from ordering a F-35 to the point when I get it?
So there's a lot of things that go into ordering an F-35. A lot of the times we focus on just building the airplane. The initial piece of long lead and building the wings and all that. From there, you also got to think about the pilot training and the maintainer training as well. And then also the base infrastructure piece. We partner with the Joint Program Office, the U.S. government, in looking at the site surveys and going to explore the base, look at the base infrastructure. And we've done it with just about everybody else. There's always concern it's going to be massive, but You look at the base infrastructure and see what's truly needed. And a lot of the times it's just some infrastructure needs to get done. There are some security requirements, but they're not like massively great and everything. For the most part, it takes about probably 5 years to get to from A to B. And trying to do all these elements, mesh them together, and they all have to sync up. But like I've said, there's 20 airplanes or 20 countries I've selected it, and we've done it more than once. So it's now I think that we have a pretty good idea of how to do things. And so, so I understand that Austria needs these airplanes early 2030s, 2032, 2033. And we should be able to kind of meet that demand.
How long does it take to get a F-35 pilot, just in general?
You know, if you take a pilot either who has gone through primary training or someone like me who used to be a fourth generation pilot, if I just want to teach that pilot how to fly an F-35, which you just experienced, which was, you know, with a few minutes of instruction, really, when I went through my initial training, it was within about 3 weeks, I was checked out in the airplane. I had about 1 week of, you know, academics teaching me about the systems of the airplane. I had about 1 week in the simulator teaching me how to fly it and what any emergency procedures might look like. And then I had 3 flights in the airplane and I was qualified to go do whatever I needed to do with that airplane. There's generally some follow-on tactical instruction that will happen. But I would say even at that, it's only a few months. So generally from start to finish to be a completely qualified tactical F-35 pilot, about 6 months, which is no longer than any other airplane. All other fourth generation or before aircraft, it was only that long. So 3 weeks until you're flying and a few more months until you've learned all of the combat systems and all the different tactics. So it's a fairly quick process to get somebody qualified to fly the F-35.
What does it mean for young pilots now compared to like before, like 20 years before? Is it now easier to get a fighter pilot?
In terms of, I think, the ability to fly and employ the airplane, yes. I think what we've done with the airplane is, right, it keeps... The F-35 is the most complex and advanced fighter aircraft that we've ever had. And yet to operate it, it actually keeps getting easier. So if you think about the technology you had in a flip cell phone, right? It didn't have a whole lot of technology. And yet if I wanted to text on a flip phone, right? I had to hit a button multiple times until I got the letter that I wanted. When we went to a smartphone, now that smartphone is a lot more complex and it's a lot more capable, but it's actually a lot easier to use, right? It just gives me a keyboard and I just type what I want. The same thing is true of an F-35. I went from something that was less advanced, but actually harder to use. And the F-35 is more advanced, but easier to use. And you asked about, you know, younger fighter pilots. Well, younger fighter pilots have grown up with this technology and they know how to use touchscreens and they know how to use quick buttons because they've had that on their gaming controllers. And so it's very intuitive and a very easy interface for a young pilot to be able to step right into the F-35 and in a very short time be able to employ it.
Maybe we could also talk a little bit about all the sensors that are used and how is it integrated in a battlefield. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
So the F-35, you know, has multiple sensors. We talked about sensor fusion and doing a lot of calculations behind the scene. It can share data across to your wingman. And it can see whatever you have on your screen, where your sensors are picking up. It can be shared across to your wingman, and whatever your wingman is starting to see, you can see it on your screen. You can set primary targets, and it will show up on your wingman's display as well. So that data is all happening seamlessly behind the scenes. It's not a pilot having to actually manage a sensor and focus on this and make a calculated decision. And so we talked about 2 ships, you know, just imagine now 4 ships and you're spreading across Austria and you're recreating that battle space and being able to see the entire battle space. And now that data from your 4-ship that's on the far left-hand side is being able to share data all the way to the fighter on the far right-hand side. And so we talk about the air surveillance piece of it. If you're doing combat air patrol, you're looking at within the air, but what about your ground troops? Some of this data can actually go down to an operations center, and from the operations center being able to disseminate that data to ground troops, air defenses, and all that. And now you have this joint all-domain operations piece of it all, and you can see this giant picture. We look at the F-35 as being like the central node of the sky. It has a lot of sensors. It can act from an air superiority fighter to a multi-role fighter, air-to-air missions, air-to-ground missions, ground air patrol missions, but also, act like as AWACS. It has all these sensors. It can see very far away. It can be undetected, and being able to take this information, this targeting information, and being able to display it all the way back to your ground forces and all that without being detected is a huge advantage in the new modern battle space. So
how much data is produced maybe in 1 second or in 1 minute flying? Can we number that?
I don't think we have an equate that to a number, but it is a lot of data. And for pilots, it's they're in the sky, and fourth gen fighters, all this data is coming from multiple sensors. So just imagine having to look at your radar information, your targeting pod, your earth pod, your EW, and just having to take all this data and make a calculation is going to take a while, because your brain can only process so much. And meanwhile, you're trying to fly an airplane and trying to figure out your threat environment. And so it is a lot of data, and it's happening very, very quickly, basically seamlessly behind the scenes.
I notice no data lag from any sensor or from anything that I'm getting from my wingmen, right? So I feel like, fiber optic internet, gigabit ethernet, right? That's the way it feels to a pilot, is I don't have to wait for any information to come back. It's not like I send a request and then I have to wait for a response. It's just automatically provided there. And not only does it give me that real-time information, I mean, everything is being recorded there, so any of that information that I get now is data that I've recorded, and I can use that, to learn things about the battle space that I can take back to intelligence or to central command, that then they can use all of that for further information. And all of that's done in a very secure way as well, right? It's all in a way that can't be intercepted. It's all cryptographically protected, such that all that information is very well protected, but very fast.
I mean, when you were doing, I'm assuming you all did an air-to-air target, acquisition. You moved the cursor over. You clicked up, and it was almost, I mean, you saw it on the screen. It's almost like immediately, and it's the same way. Like your wingman would see it the same way. So like Cujo said, there's no lag. It's just seamlessly happening.
You mentioned the wingman, and as far as manned, unmanned teaming is concerned, what are the possibilities? What could we imagine doing here?
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about it, and Cujo can add more, but that's something that we're looking into and into the future, is the collaborative combat aircraft. And, how do we integrate these airplanes? What are the CONOPs and tactics that we would use? These CCAs would have different missions, like air-to-air or like an EW-type thing, or air-to-ground. And you could fly seamlessly with three or four other CCAs into that mission. And then the F-35 would be, in English, we'd say the quarterback in the sky, like in American football. But maybe like here, it's like the coach on the pitch of a U.S. of a soccer field, is being able to dictate and be able to take even more data now. Not just your wingman, but now you have these CCAs providing information too, and even spread even further out as well. So we are looking into that, and we think that there is a viable future there. And there it's more of developing the technology than it's developing the CONOPs and tactics that would be used. So
have you ever done this manned, unmanned teaming?
So we've done a lot of testing. So yes, we've shown some concepts about how all of this could be integrated. And so we, Lockheed Martin, have done some of those very things airborne. We've been able to, in various aircraft, and we've used a lot of different aircraft to test these concepts. But we've sent pilots airborne who have a tablet, and they're able with their tablet to be able to send commands to other aircraft out there that then autonomously are able to go attack targets or able to intercept any other air targets. And we've developed various ways for the pilot to interact with all of those aircraft. One of the important things which you saw while flying in the F-35 is because it is relatively simple to fly and because that information gets intuitively presented to you, the pilot actually has the spare brain capacity to be able to look at his teammates, again, like the coach on the pitch, who can say, okay, I really need to send my strikers here and I need to send, you know, these other aircraft this way. And so you could be that airborne air battle manager as the F-35 pilot and just give a intent to the collaborative combat aircraft, the unmanned wingman, and just say, I need you, this team, to go there, and they could just go execute that. And all that could be commanded right there from the F-35.
It still would be, you know, through the sensor fusion. Like, it's just now we're adding another sensor, and now it's still being disseminated within and making calculations. If you look at it, we understand, like, there'll be fourth gen fighters also looking to the CCAs and all that, but this is just now another sensor that pilot's going to have to look at, monitor, along with an EW system, a radar, electronic warfare system, targeting pods. So now from the pilot workload from a fourth gen fighter is going to increase, even though it's a great capability to have. And so I think that's a main advantage of fifth gen, that sensor fusion, that we can add additional sensors and add it into the sensor fusion architect.
Okay, gentlemen, thanks for the interesting talk.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being with us. It was good to fly with you.
And thanks for the possibility. Have a safe travel back to the United States.
That was a Militär Aktuell deep dive all about the F-35 fighter jet. Before we say goodbye, a quick look at our upcoming events. European Air Defense Summit, November the 18th to the 19th, 2026 in Vienna, and Dronevation and Defense, May 20th, 2027, also in Vienna. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Militär Aktuell, the podcast. Visit us online at militäraktuell.at and subscribe to our printed magazine.